Seminole fans, this is Sunday Golds, a Florida State baseball podcast. I'm Mario Masuti alongside Brett Nevitt. It is Thursday, April 25th, and the Noles are in the teeth of their ACC schedules, and it's getting real this time of year. We're seeing national seed stock projections rolling out by the national websites. Florida State's 32-8, a nice convincing win over the UNF Osprey there in the midweek action. The Noles got back to their winning ways, and they head to a big weekend in Durham against the Duke Blue Devils, who are a top 10 team and are vying for a hosting spot for regionals and maybe a national seed as well. Chris Pollard, one of the best coaches in the country. I do want to remind you, Alumni Hall is your ultimate FSU shopping experience. Shop top brands, Nike, Champion, Columbia, Comfort Colors, Johnny O, On Reserve, Southern Tide, and more. Alumni Hall has seminal gear for the entire family, plus accessories and gifts. FSU students, faculty, and military receive 10% off with an ID by shopping in store. Come see us in our new location on Timberland Road near REI, right next to First Watch, or shop anytime online at alumnihall.com. Alumni Hall, where Seminole fans shop. So that's been a cool development for us here, partnering up with Alumni Hall. If you need gear to get to Hauser, they've got the best FSU baseball apparel. And we do have an exclusive Sunday Golds discount code SG15 that you can use in store or online to be able to get 15% off. Brett, we've been growing this pod here for a couple of years, and the Noles are a top 10 baseball team, and cool to have some friends jump on board here at Alumni Hall.
Yeah, beautiful ad read by you. Just first of many, hopefully. Great job. You're such a beautiful voice you have. But yeah, obviously really excited about that, and really thankful for Alumni Hall, and you know, obviously thankful for a good season as well, which helps us with this stuff and helps grow our audience as well. So you know, still a long road ahead this season. It's kind of crazy to me that we're already 40 games in. Like, sometimes, you know, when you're having fun, time flies by, and that seems like it's what it's been like so far. And only a few more games left at Hauser, but in the regular season at least, hopefully there's more on to that, added on to that in the back end. But yeah, lots of positive, exciting developments recently.
No doubt. Thanks for the kind words. Saw first pitch fastball, you know, like James Tibbs, and just wrote it out of the park there on the first try. Do also want to remind you about Alumni Hall, and you know, they are partnering with us, but I also do shop there. Brad, I know you've gotten stuff there as well, and to me, they've got such an incredible vintage collection that you can have, and I've always been a big fan of that Nike vintage line that they've dropped, and Alumni Hall seems to have the best stuff. And they were telling me that, you know, for every $150 that you spend, they give you $10 back in rewards. So to me, that feels like a no-brainer, right? If you're going to drop $75 on a polo, two polos gets you $10 back, and you can use that anywhere else in Alumni Hall. But they're hopping on board with us. The Seminoles are 32-8. Let's give you a synopsis of this show. We'll talk about UNF, some things that stood out. I know Brett really loved the way some of the rookie arms threw in that one. Marco Dinges continues to figure out how to hit home runs with the bases loaded. Tibbs continues to be a monster. And this team, I think, was able to get right before they go and play Duke and feel good about themselves. And then I think we'll preview this Duke series. Duke's really good, folks. A really, really good baseball team that, if you thought Wake was a tough task, Duke might be a notch above that. Certainly in the same elk, they're a little bit different, you know, in the way that they go about things under Chris Pollard. But we also have an exclusive interview with Marco Dinges. He was so kind to join us here this week and talk a little bit about the season, his journey to Florida State, and what's at stake for FSU this year, a part of a team that's vying for a national seed and seems like one of the favorites to make it to Omaha here in 2024. And then I think we'll talk some national. We've been talking about national seeds, so I think we should give you a picture of the college baseball landscape, where things stand, some other conferences, who the Noles may be jockeying with to try and get a top eight seed, and if that doesn't go their way, can they at least salvage a top 16, and host a regional at Hauser for the first time since 2018? So full show planned here. Hopefully we'll go about 45 minutes, but Brett, let's talk UNF, an Osprey team that saw some familiar faces come back. You talked about, you know, some of the players, but also good to see Tyler Holt, Drew Linder back at Hauser, and Mercadante, you know, he's got his work cut out for them over there in the Jacksonville area, and not the best UNF baseball team we've seen, but I thought Florida State came out, played clean baseball, and that's the type of start I think you needed from Matt Sauser, who's looking to try and factor in here, right? And then John Abraham really came in and did a nice job too.
Yeah, I mean, first on T. Holt and Drew Linder, I just wanted to note, they were at T. Holt's coaching third base for UNF, and Linder, who was bullpen catcher at Florida State's, coaching first base, and T. Holt's actually wearing number 3 to represent Big Shooter, and I believe Linder is wearing 38 for 3 + 8 = 11. So pretty cool for those two guys, and yeah, good to see them back at Hauser. But yeah, I just thought it was a strong bounce back win for Florida State, and especially, you know, after last week with Mercer, you didn't take care of business. Kind of looking ahead, it felt like to the Wake Forest series, but you didn't look ahead to it. You know, you had to get back from North Carolina. Luckily, you know, you had an extra day of rest because of the doubleheader on Saturday, which gave you Sunday off. But you still had to travel and bus back from North Carolina all day Sunday, and then have an off day Monday and get back to it on Tuesday. So just good to see them come in there and kind of, you know, after Marco's home run, it was a pretty stress-free game, and just taking care of business and doing what you got to do against a team that you're much better than this year. So, yeah, and to get 3 freshman arms out there, and I thought all 3 of them showed you something, and to have them in kind of a more controlled environment, you see more of what they're capable of, I think, and it gives you more of a positive outlook on what those guys could potentially do for you down the road. But we do need to see it from them at some point in pressure environments. But like, these are the moments that you want freshmen to pitch in. You want them to pitch on a midweek where you're at home and kind of a less, you know, low leverage situation, and they're getting their work in. And you know, I thought they all handled that well. So yeah, I just thought there were some things to take away from this game, and a lot of positives for Florida State from this midweek game.
2 questions for you about those that trio of freshman arms. Sauser, Abraham, Rowan, 1, how much are they going to have to factor into what Florida State wants to do? You know, we're in the end of April, and so once you turn the page to May, I mean, that's go time to try and position yourself. Feels like to me those 3 are going to be necessary in some higher leverage moments just because of the state of your arms. Even if you get some of these guys back, you're going to need those 3. And then the second question, if you could answer, what was working for them against UNF that allowed them to be successful? And what did you notice differently, regardless of who the opponent was or what day and how much intensity was maybe attached to that type of game?
Yeah, I think at this point in the season for any team, like, you're so deep into it and guys have covered so many innings, especially for FSU, since some of your arms went down, you've had to extend guys out, and they've filled up a lot of innings. So you get deeper into your depth, and you need guys like the freshmen to step up and be able to give you innings to fill out a complete staff. Like, I think we've talked about that for a lot of the year. And like, this is one of those spots where you don't really want to have to use your guys that have been taxed a lot recently, like Brennan Oxford and Andrew Armstrong. Like, you're hoping you can give those guys a day off, and you were able to because of the work that the freshmen gave you. I think with Sauser, obviously, I think he walked the first batter of the game and gave up a hit, but then he settled down really nicely, got out of the first inning scoreless, gave up a solo shot in the second, which, that's fine. Solo shots aren't going to hurt you, and it was kind of just a ball that got up in the air, and the ball was traveling a bit to left field. I felt like it was carrying out that way. Hit that ball and Dinch's ball both really got high up in the air and just kind of traveled over the wall. But, you know, just good to see Sauser out there and command the strike zone after that first batter. And I think, you know, Link talked about it too. Sauser was like the most consistent freshman arm for this team for all of fall and all of preseason. Like, I really was really high on what he was going to be able to do for them this year because of the day in and day out consistency that he brought with every outing. And, you know, I think the fastball, it has enough life on it that it's going to miss bats. It's just right now it's developing the secondary for Sauser, and how much swing and miss can he get with the breaking ball and the changeup. So just the development of his secondary stuff will be big for him. But I think he has the consistency and the fastball to be someone that can get you out. With John, we've seen this from John before this year with three inning outing. That was really good. Only one hit allowed, no walks, four strikeouts, only 35 pitches to get 9 outs, five ground outs. Like that's all really good. And like I said, this isn't the first time we've seen good from John this year. It's just been a bit of a roller coaster, and you're trying to figure out what makes him tick and what situations is he comfortable in, what situations he's not comfortable in. But like these flashes are the reason that he's put into high leverage situations, because you know the stuff is there. Like he came in his first inning and struck out the side on like 12 pitches, and it was really good stuff. And he's hammering the knuckle curve in there for strikes, and then he's going and attacking late in counts with both the fastball and the two breaking balls that he has. So it was just a really good outing for John, and good for him to get back on track after the weekend he had at Wake. And you know, I think John has shown that at home he can do this for you. It's just, what can he give you on the road at this point? Because we've seen him struggle a couple times in that situation. But you know the stuff is there. It's just about attacking the zone and being confident to go at hitters. And I think John should be with his stuff. And then Hudson was the third freshman to come in. I think he started his evening with a 1-2-3 fifth inning. That was good to see. Sixth inning. Or no, he had John Hudson had a 1-2-3 sixth inning, and then Hudson came back out for the seventh. He got the first batter out, but then had a walk and a two-out walk before UL came in and stranded both runners on base, which was good to see. But Hudson, yeah, he did walk a couple more batters again, but the first inning was good, and he had two strikeouts. And you see the stuff, and I mean the fastball is going up to 93 with 26 inches of induced vertical break, which is elite. Like it's. You just don't see that very often. And it's just the consistency of what Hudson's doing is you're trying to find that. You're trying to find a way to get him in the zone with the release point. I think that's why it's so hard for him to command the baseball sometimes, is because of how much the ball is you know, so-called rising out of his hand off the trajectory that it comes off of. And you're just trying to hone that in and trying to get that paired up with the breaking ball in the zone. And if you could do that, you know you have a ton of swing and miss there, but it's just – what are you going to get consistency and strike-wise from him? But, you know, really still like this stuff a lot. And we saw a little bit more of that there on Tuesday.
Yeah, we saw Abraham before, you know, in Jacksonville. He did a nice job, I thought, against UF and getting a big K there of Caglione out there in Duval. And, you know, to me, Abraham's one that they're going to have to keep using, because – you've mentioned it in the past, Brett, and I agree with you. There's just a lack of depth of right-handed relieving options right now for FSU, so maybe there's a matchup that you're just going to need a righty, and you've seen Abraham get some outs.
And just looking at the numbers, you see the stuff there. He has a 178 average against, which is one of the lowest marks on your team, and 27 strikeouts and 20 and two-thirds. But then you look at the 17 walks, and that's what hurts you there. So you just – you got to trust stuff to attack in the zone. And you see that it's there. You just got to trust it.
Maybe for Abraham, it's as simple as start an inning and don't come in the middle of an at bat or in the middle of traffic. I don't know. That could be. You were just saying what makes a guy tick.
Or maybe it's just getting guys in earlier in games when it's a little less high leverage in their head. Like maybe you are in a higher leverage situations because. Like Link likes to bring in some of the veteran high leverage arms like Andrew Armstrong and Joe Charles and those types in early in games because he knows how important it is to limit things early on. But I think when you do that, it ends up leading to where you have to put the younger guys in later, and some of them have struggled with that. So maybe you're just trying to flip-flop things around to see if you can get success. But you know, with all three of the arms that are out right now trending in the right direction, you know, maybe you won't have to rely on them as much, but still do think you'll have to rely on them in some form or fashion.
Yeah, Rowan's one that I think because of this stuff, you're going to keep running him out there because he's one outing from it all clicking and being everything that you thought it could be. And he's such a high competitor, really wants to be out there. That's a kid who wants the ball, you know, and he wants to be there for his team. So I just think he's going to be someone they continue to roll out there. Now, it may not be an inning and two-thirds. It may not be 30 pitches. But it may be, hey, I've got two lefties coming up in a row. I need you to go get those two kids out. That has to happen. And I think Rowan is someone that embraces that and says, give me the ball, coach. I'll go get those two kids out for you.
Do you trust him late in the season to give you strikes when you have to have it at this point because of 20 walks and 13.2? But at the same time, even with the walks, he can limit damage at some points with 27 Ks and 13.2. But, yeah, you put a lot of traffic on bases late in games, later in the season, you get yourself in trouble. So it's, but the reason they do keep putting him out there is to try and find that rhythm like you're talking about.
Yeah, and you, again, you're one outing away from it being incredible, and that's someone you rely on deep into your future, you know, in this program. Can we talk some offense?
Yeah.
The lineup, I thought, I want your take on. We saw Diamez Ross get the start in center, leads off, Williams to the five hole. Thoughts on that overall? And it was another strong offensive day, really, for the entire lineup.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Jaime, he was just dinged up a good bit, I think. You know, I think the pitch that Burns hit him with was a fastball on his wrist. I think it was on the wrist/hand area. And I think Link said that that same spot had been stepped on at one point, sliding into a bag or something like that. So he took BP and everything and probably could have played if he had to in a dire situation. But, you know, they decided to give him the day off, and he's expected to be okay, and I think he'll be back in the lineup. But, yeah, he did get Diamez back in the lineup, and he did some good things for you. He had the really good bunt that loaded the bases before Dingus's grand slam in the third inning. That was, I think it was supposed to be a sack bunt, but it was such a good bunt that it was perfectly put between the pitcher and the third baseman. And we saw that same thing happen to Cam and a pitcher earlier this year where the batter just put it perfectly in between those two, and you get a bit of a miscommunication for a base hit bunt. And, you know, Diamez in his first debut, I thought, impacted a ball pretty well to center field. He impacted a ball well to center field as well for a sack fly in the fourth inning. So some good things from Diamez there. Link talked about how he's the best kid on any team in the country. Like, that's how highly thought of Diamez's character is from both the staff and other people on the team. And, you know, I think Diamez understands his role, and Diamez is going to help the team to win in any way he can. But, you know, another good day for Max in the five spot. I think that spot really profiles well for him. But, you know, ever since we talked about Max in the leadoff spot, he's been awesome there. So I think he's still going to be leading off. And, yeah, I think he's on a crazy hot streak right now at the plate, and another two-hit game for him. And funnily, he took two walks, which I don't know if he had really taken. I think he had one walk in the last 13 games or something in the leadoff spot, and you drop him down to five. And I think his first AB he walked, and I think Ty McGee, he just turned to me and kind of laughed a little bit, just knowing that, you know, he had swung at a lot of first pitches. But another really good day for him in the five spot. So, yeah, I thought the lineup was interesting, and it might profile even a little better than maybe your normal everyday lineup does. But your normal everyday lineup's been awesome for you as well, and there's no reason to change that.
Hey, happy to see Diamez get a start. And like you said, as good of a kid as you'll find anywhere. Always has a smile on his face. I mean, it's good vibes, good energy always. And I think those types of people, everyone else roots for, no matter what. In life, as a baseball player, I don't think it matters. I think I have this hunch that Ross is going to come up big in some kind of moment this year. And it could be postseason where you just go, that kid's a winner, you know? And it embodies everything he's kind of been through already, you know, and early in his career in Tallahassee. I really do love that kid.
Well, if there's going to be someone that's your 10th man, because it has to be someone at some point. There's, like Link has said all year, there's a lot of good players in this roster. There's a lot of guys that deserve to play, and not all those guys are going to play because there is talent on this roster. And if there was someone to be your 10th man, Diamez is the person that's going to stay engaged when he's not in the game, that when his time is called, when his moment is called upon, like, he'll be ready to go. Like, whether that's making a big catch in the outfield, whether that's putting down a bunt or getting a sack fly or driving a run in with a runner on third and less than 2 outs or stealing a base, something like that. Like, he's someone that will stay engaged. And there's a few guys recently who have been hurt that have been really engaged. Like, I've noticed Cam Leiter at Wake. There were a couple of times I just looked in the dugout and I felt like Cam Leiter was the person most engaged in the game out of anybody in the dugout. And you got a few of those guys on this team that are like that, that just want the team to win. And I think that's, you know, in the interview I'm coming with Marco, I think that's a big thing that you got from him as well.
Yeah. We'll get to that here in a second. Five ribbies for Marco. Tibbsy, what else is there left to say about James? I mean, elite hitter. I saw your article earlier today, you know, MLB.com put out their draft pipeline, and Tibbs is now a top 25 prospect. And, I mean, everyone you talk to is basically pretty sure that this kid's a first-rounder at this point. He's awesome, man. It's one of those generational players, you know, that your school gets and that your program gets, and it's elite. Everything about him is winning baseball, and he had another massive home run, and gosh, that was a no-doubter that he hit. And so good to see him continuing. I just think, like, you need Tibbs and some of these stars, right, when this weekend at Duke, postseason baseball, I mean, even before that, NC State comes to town, you need those guys to step up in those moments and give you big moments. And so he's going to be one that I think leads this group really the rest of the year. Cam Smith's on-base streak continues.
50 games.
I mean, come on. That's special. It's special.
10th longest in program history.
He's a phenomenal baseball player. Was he ranked 21st?
They were ranked, yes. Cam was ranked 21 and James was ranked 22 back-to-back.
I need you, when you get a chance, Brett, to, you know, maybe for a different podcast or an article, when's the last time Florida State had two first-round draft picks?
1995.
In the same draft. Who were they?
Paul Jonathan Wilson? Johnson and David Yoakum.
Say that one more time.
Jonathan Johnson and David Yoakum.
Okay. Pitchers? I think.
Rangers and Dodgers.
Okay.
I wasn't alive. I was negative 5 years old, so you tell me.
I was born, but barely. That's cool. I think the context of that is it's been a while, right? And this is a real possibility for Florida State this season to have those two kids taken within the top 25 picks of the first round. So overall, really good day for the offense. Is there anything else you want to touch on about the UNF game? Anything else that stood out? And then we'll get to welcoming Marco Dinges on the show.
Yeah, I was just going to note a couple of things offensively. You know, with Marco, that's his third grand slam of the season, ninth grand slam of the season for FSU as a program, which is a program record. And just another really big swing from Marco, just got a ball out in front, got the bat head down and lifted it out to left. And it just kept carrying and carrying. I thought it was going to be a sac fly at first when he got it off the bat, but he got it just enough to get it over the fence for his 10th home run of the year. Like you said, Tibbs' home run was a no-doubter. I think it was 111 off the bat and 430-some feet. Tibbs at this point is leading the ACC with a 1345 OPS, also leads the ACC with 64 RBIs and an 842 slugging percentage, while being the league's toughest hitter to strike out. So, I mean, 0.36 strikeouts per game for James. I mean, he just moved into the top 10 in the program history for home runs with 44. And he tied his career high with that 17th home run of the season. That's as many home runs as he had all last year. And now he's got three more homers and strikeouts. It's just everything about it is really good. And those two guys combined, like I tweeted about it after the game, the combination of them with their power and their ability to get the bat on the ball and not strike out. I mean, the two of them together, 27 home runs, 109 RBIs, and 54 walks to 32 strikeouts. So you've gotten just elite production from those two guys in the middle of the order.
Very much so. Cam Smith, you said it yourself, 10th longest, right? Mm-hmm. Shane Robinson is who he's tied with. That's pretty cool, man. I mean, those are some legendary names. Other notes from Stephen McCartney, 13-0 against the state of Florida. This is a really good state, yeah. Brett. I mean, it's got talent everywhere. The high school and the travel ball circuits play year-round because they can. So that's very impressive. Smith and Tibbs, as you said, both 400. Only Power 5 teammates hitting over 400 this season in the country. That's pretty special.
There's a note to that.
Go for it.
Only teammates hitting 400 with at least 125 ABs. Virginia snuck in there with two to break up McCartney's stat.
Who was that?
They like have two Salke. Hitters, two hitters with that haven't played as much as the two.
Does that count?
Yeah, they're qualified hitters, okay. So they do count. Jacob Ferentz, and then the other one's not actually qualified, and on ACC stats, but they are qualified on NCAA.com. That's why. But yeah, I mean, those are the only guys with as many at-bats as they have. Only pair of teammates with an average over 400 to this point. And they're both hitting 401.
No, good stuff. Jaime not playing was the first time in 152 games.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's just a tribute to the durability.
He's creeping up on Link's record.
Yeah. I mean, Jaime's been in there every day. And that's, I do believe that that's something someone should get credit for, right? Is the ability for your body to be able to take that many games in a row. When you look at the big leagues and guys that aren't missing days, you really respect that. You know, the Mookie Betts of the world, the Ronald Acuna's, like those guys get in there every day when they can. And I think I respect the heck out of that. So hat tip to Jaime for that streak. 15 straight games for Florida State with a home run. That's pretty cool. This team continues to be physical. I think Noles are second in the ACC in home runs to Virginia Tech by, you know, just one.
Yeah.
78-77.
1.93 homers per game.
Yeah. This team's physical. And I had some scouts at Wake Forest walk up and we were talking and then they were like, you know, I'm surprised by how physical this Florida State lineup is. Maybe, you know, they weren't expecting that when they came to the park if they're getting their first look at Florida State. It's nine guys that can leave the yard, man. It's a good offense, and I think you have a shot in every game you played this season, regular and postseason, because of that lineup and the ability to get back into it with a home run at any point. So
you're pretty much second to Virginia in like every single offensive
Well,
statistic.
The home runs is VT.
Oh, okay.
But yes, so Virginia.
Other than that, yeah.
Somehow Virginia in conference play is well over 300 as a team.
They hit, man.
Their lineup bangs, man. Good stuff.
FSU does lead the ACC with a 580 slugging percentage, which is sixth in the country. I think that's what we focused on when FSU was getting the ads in the portal that they did. And they're not the guys that are carrying the bulk for the most part. Obviously, Dingus is, but it's just having the depth of power when you go into 6 through 9 and you're still getting some juice from those guys. Like, that's when you end up being a team that's in the top of the country, not just when you have those guys that are 2 through 4 that can do it. But when you have 1 through 9, I mean, especially with Max at the top, like that's what you went out and tried to get, and it's paid off, I think.
Yeah, 36 out of 40 games this season with a home run for FSU, just 4 times all year. They haven't left the park at least once in a game. So, all right, I think one of the guys who's been contributing to that, and you talked about newcomers, just a wonderful kid. Great interview. And has really solidified the middle of that Florida State order. Marco Dingus, very kind to join Sunday Golds. Enjoy this interview and this sit-down with Florida State's designated hitter.
Marco, I've got to start with the beginning. How does a guy from Beekman, New York, find his way in the state of Florida and then at Florida State University?
So, no, most definitely. So, it's quite the journey. I moved 3 times in high school, so I started in New York for 15 years. In Beekman, New York, and then I made the move to Virginia my junior year. COVID hits, my buddy moves to Tampa, Florida, and I go to live with him for about 3 months, and then my parents followed. And then that's how I found TCC. So go to TCC for 2 years, great experience, learned a lot, and then was blessed enough to receive an offer to Florida State.
Before you came to Florida State, though, there was a couple of stops. Obviously, TCC, like you mentioned, community college. What did you learn from the JUCO level, and how can you be someone that encourages maybe younger players who are looking at college, that how junior college can help them really ultimately get to their final stop and their final destinations?
No, most definitely. I mean, I was very undersized, very under-recruited. I mean, out of high school, I had only had one offer, and that was TCC. They were the only one to give me an opportunity. So it's just, JUCO helped me to get stronger, more physical, and learn the game, definitely. I mean, it's, especially the Panhandle Conference, it's a whole nother ball game of competition, a lot different than high school. So it helped me to really develop and learn my game. And then when I got here, I mean, the pitching over there, it's obviously not similar, but you can make some minor adjustments and then get used to it pretty quick.
Yeah, you've adjusted pretty quickly, I would say.
Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad at all. Marco, you know, can you take us through when that relationship with Florida State started? Do you remember where you were the day that you got the offer? And who all did you call immediately after you got the official scholarship offer?
So, yeah, funny enough, originally I was going to go to Maryland, decommitted. I was having a pretty good junior college season, so a lot more interest. Then, unfortunately, I got sick this summer. So I kind of lost a lot of interest, but Link Jerry was really close to the Brian Henry, and they kind of were able to get a little deal going while I was in the hospital bed. So it actually made a lot more of an impact, especially because I was going through some tough times.
Yeah, Brian Henry, I know Seminole fans know, is one of the legends at Florida State on the mounds. And now coaching with TCC himself. Marco, this team, this season, 32-8, this has been a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun for me to call the games. I'm sure a lot of fun for Brett to be able to cover and for the fans to be able to be there. What's it been like for you in that clubhouse every single day with this lineup, with this group? It feels like every time you guys take the field, you guys have a real belief that you can win the ball game.
No, 100%. It's been the greatest experience, I mean, anyone can ask for. I mean, every day you're standing with absolute studs and you got to compete. I mean, earlier in the year, it's to stay in the lineup, and it kind of motivated me to even be better, which is, I credit my success. I mean, you got Tibbs, Smith, Ferreira. I mean, everyone 1 through 9 is amazing hitters, and it motivated us. It motivates the whole team to succeed, and it kind of feeds off that energy. So, I mean, our end goal is obviously Omaha, and truly we believe it. And when the team spirit is that high, it's good.
You've been a key cog for this lineup, Marco. Do you ever, though, as one of the nine, that we all nine of you guys can bang, man? Like, it's insane to watch the entire lineup. And there's guys on the bench that could be playing and being able to contribute. Do you ever look around the lineup and go, man, like, I'm playing with James Tibbs, Cam Smith, and there's just some ridiculous talent 1 through 9 in this order?
No, most definitely. I mean, I feel like 1 through 9, they can go bat third at any ACC team. So it's kind of like we have a 1 through 9 of three hitters. Obviously, you got James Tibbs, Cam Smith. I mean, potential first rounders that are going to perform and going to shine. But 1 through 9, it's three hitters on any team. And then you got guys on the bench. You can make a second team that is just as good as our team in the ACC, which is, when you got a team like that, it's pretty remarkable.
And you talk about a couple of draft picks there in the lineup. Marco, if you keep hitting the way that you are, you might have your name in that mix here pretty soon. As someone who's locked in the middle of a season right now, we're in April with a lot of baseball left. And obviously your end goal, I'm sure since you were a kid, is to play in the big leagues. How do you balance that and make sure that, yes, you know, you're trying to play well so you get drafted, but also you're giving everything you got to this team so you guys can end up in Omaha?
No, most definitely. I mean, winning is only going to help your stock. And when a team is progressively getting better, you're seeing the player stocks go up. I mean, Tibbs is a perfect example. He's showing everyone, we knew already in the fall how good of a hitter he is, but it's really showing now and it's exposing him. And I think winning is also helping that. I mean, unfortunately last year they didn't have the best season. So a lot of guys' stocks definitely went down, but winning is what's going to make your stock increase. So the end goal is just to win. I mean, you don't really want to think about draft. You don't want to get your head too big. So day by day, just progressively getting better and succeeding. And that's going to ultimately bring your money up at the end.
Yeah, well said, man. I couldn't have said it any better myself. This is a question from Brett. So, you know, it's going to be technical and it's going to have some technique involved. He said there's a lot of moving parts to your swing, but you're able to get on time every single time, especially on fastballs. And now that you've been able to hit the breaking ball more consistently, what's been your keys there to making sure that you're always on time? And take us through kind of your sequence there as you're hitting at the plate.
No, most definitely. I mean, earlier I was struggling picking up off speed. I was swinging a lot of pitches in the dirt. So key factors, always be on time for the heater. Never miss the heater. Always get the foot down, be ready to go. But if you see spin early up, it's honestly, I've learned it's one of the easier pitches to hit out. I mean, a lot of my home runs have been on hanging sliders first pitch, because especially when they go to the bullpen, they're going to try to bring in their what they got their best stuff is. So if the guy's best stuff is a slider, you can kind of sit slider. But if you see it up ultimately, I make the adjustment pretty easily now. And that's the pitch I'm hammering, is that hanging slider. And then obviously always hunting the heater. Got to be ready for the heater no matter what.
I think you hunted an off-speed pitch for sure against the big one against there yesterday in the midweek game, and you hit a grand slam against UNF. What is it about you and with guys on the bases and knowing that there's nowhere to put you that ends up you putting the ball over the fence?
No, it's funny enough. No, yeah, I'm just trying to hit the ball deep, get a run in. Ultimately, that's what's funny enough, is trying to be a team player, trying to get the run in no matter what. Getting the ball off the ground, getting in the outfield, sort of sack fly, and then if you barrel it, some good things can happen. And it's funny because earlier in the season, I was leading the country in sack flies. So ultimately not the long ball, but now those things are getting over. So definitely a lot better feeling a grand slam than a sack fly, but ultimately just getting the run in, just being a team guy no matter what.
Without a doubt there. Can we talk a little bit about this past weekend at Wake Forest and then what you guys are going to face against Duke? Wake, to me, and I've been calling this now, calling baseball for 10 years, that was a postseason type of series. I mean, that felt like a super regional. I know you in between the lines could feel that with their fans. Brett and I were able to make the trip to cover that. What was that like this weekend? How do you ultimately hope that a weekend like that can help this baseball team moving forward?
No, most definitely. I mean, it's just like Clemson. It's a learning curve. I mean, obviously, it's not obvious, but personally, we all feel like we're definitely the better team. Even entering the game, we know we're the better team. So this is ultimately getting the job done. I mean, pitching and hitting sides, there was a lot of things we could have capitalized on that unfortunately we didn't, but in the long run, it's going to only help us. It's better to learn now when it's during the season and when, I mean, obviously everything matters, but playoffs is the ultimate goal and that's when ready to go. So it's a really good learning curve, honestly, to get ready for like playoffs and that type of atmosphere. Cause they were just like Clemson, man, every inning music, getting the fans going. So it's good to get it done now compared to later.
Yeah. I heard somebody comparing, you know, the ACC and the SEC to grinds. You're in a meat grinder, which is why those two conferences put the most teams in Omaha every single year, is because they've been prepared for it throughout their regular season. How do you think that this weekend against Duke will be another stepping stone for you guys? And what's it going to take for you guys to be able to beat the Blue Devils at their park, a top five team?
No, most definitely. I think just playing our game. It's just as simple as that. I mean, 1 through 9, I think a lot of people will agree we're the best in the country, and some stuff hasn't gone our way, but I mean, it's a no brainer. When you got basically a whole lineup batting above 300, it's going to be dangerous. And I think it's just playing our game, doing the little things right. And ultimately that's what's going to make us succeed. And the game will show 1 through 9. Link says it all the time. It'll show if you're doing what you're supposed to do, the score will show at the end. And usually you're going to be winning.
Marco, what's it been like to play at Hauser this season in front of that fan base? I mean, against Florida, you got people climbing the fences, trying to get in. Against Miami, you set the record. I don't know if you knew that. You guys set the record for most attendance in a 3-game weekend at Hauser. What's that been like for you playing at home in front of this fan base?
It's been the greatest experience of my life, man. You can't ask for a better fan base either. I mean, as players, we're motivated every day to show up, not only for ourselves, but to impress every day. I mean, there's always new people coming in the stadium, so we want to put on a good performance for the fans, and ultimately that's the goal. And it's been such a great experience. Definitely the best time of my life, man, playing in front of all these people that are always rooting for you, cheering no matter the highs or lows. So I can't ask for anything better, honestly. And that goes for the whole team. We all agree it's been amazing.
And Marco, there really is no other fan base like Florida State's fan base, especially in baseball. It's special. Last question for you, and then I'll let you go. This team, to make Omaha, to be able to finish the regular season strong and host a regional, hopefully, and if things go right, be a national seed so you can potentially have the right to host a super regional. What do you guys have to do to make sure that those things happen? And what's the vibe like right now inside that clubhouse as you guys are trying to get towards your goals?
Yeah, sticking to our game. I mean, we got a big weekend coming up, so getting ready to compete and making sure everyone's ready to go, trying to stay as healthy as possible. That's also another factor. I mean, unfortunately, we lost some really key arms early. Hopefully some come back. But it's just staying with each other, believing in each other, and not overshooting. I mean, you want to think about Omaha, but you want to go one game at a time. So we're trying to compete every pitch. Link says it the best, one pitch at a time. And we're just going to go out there and play our best baseball. And at the end, the score will show.
The Grand Slam King, Marco Dinges. Appreciate you, man, joining us.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Marco for joining us in Alumni Hall for being able to make that possible. And Brett, you've known about Marco now for a little while, and you saw him in the fall. He was one of Florida State's standouts offensively in the preseason, a kid who consistently gets to fastballs and doesn't strike out much. what a team player too, right? A guy that really believes in this group and what they're trying to accomplish this year. And he said it was the time of his life. He's not had a season like this. And it just kind of goes to show that the clubhouse, the vibe is in a good spot, right? And that chemistry between the group is at an all-time high.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing I noticed about Marco when he got here in the fall was just there's a lot going on there with that swing, and there's a ton of juice, and the BP is some of the most powerful BP you'll see, but how's it going to play in game with all that moving stuff? And that's kind of the first question that you get about Marco a lot. And, you know, the more I watched him in fall and just the more ABs he got under his belt and the consistency of that bat and the approach and the consistent power that he produced. And just, I think the thing with Marco that I always noticed was he just doesn't miss fastballs. Like, I think I would call you in fall and just say he just doesn't get beat by fastballs, no matter the velo that you bring at him. Even at Gavin Adams, when he was throwing upper 90s and a Cam Leiter, like anybody that you threw at him, the thing that with Marco was the biggest thing was he didn't miss fastballs. And he said that in your interview with him. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing to him, and the ability to recognize spin up in the zone, like he said, that gives you ability to do damage on hanging breaking balls. So, yeah, just a really good hitter. And, you know, people always think that he's going to swing and miss because of how much action's going on there, but he really doesn't. And it's impressive to watch, and there's been a ton of production from him this year. And I think, you know, when you listen to him talk about team and everything like that, you understand why he is so good at getting, you know, runs home when he needs to.
There were a couple of X factors, right, on this team when they came in that you had said there was a group and there was a core that you could count on, but then that there would be a handful of kids, depending on how they played and how they adjusted to this level of ACC pitching, would ultimately make the difference on how effective your lineup was and how dangerous your lineup was. Marco might be chief of all of those, right? Coming from community college, from JUCO ranks, he's hitting better in ACC play than he was in non-conference play. And that's a sign of a kid who continues to get better. I think as, you know, scouts in the draft look at him and then they say, all right, well, maybe right now he doesn't have a position. We're trying to figure that part out. But the bat is trending upwards. This is a kid that, you know, in every season arc, when you look at how things materialized, a couple of kids kind of develop into stars. I think Dinges is becoming a star alongside guys like Cantu and Williams, who have come in right as transfers and made just such an immediate impact at this ACC level.
Yeah, like you said with Marco, the ACC numbers hitting .329 in ACC with 5 doubles, 2 triples, and 5 home runs. You've actually got 4 guys in ACC with 5 home runs, and then Jaime leads the team with 7 in ACC play. But Marco, 671 slugging percentage, 420 OBP, so OPS over 1,000, almost 1,100. In ACC play, and 11 walks to 6 strikeouts. Like, that's the thing that stands out always with Marco and Tibbs too. Like, Tibbs in ACC play, 15 walks to 6 strikeouts. So, yeah, 5 qualified hitters on your team that are hitting above 300 in ACC play, and actually six guys hitting above .296 if you include Max Williams, and 5 of those 6 guys have 5 or more home runs. So that's just a lot of damage and a depth of power that is going to, you know, change games quickly, which we've seen with this offense.
They're going to need this offense, Brett. Are you ready to talk a little bit about Duke?
Yeah.
I think it's time to pivot over to what you called the teeth of this schedule: Wake Forest, Duke, NC State. 2 of the 3 series on the road. We've talked about how, you know, it's tough that a lot of your hardest series on the year are away from Tallahassee. The Noles actually haven't beaten anyone in a series this year that is a surefire NCAA tournament team, a regional team. So not to take credit away from the season that they've had, 32-8, top 10 is loud. RPI of 6 is loud. But you need a marquee series victory on your resume. And when you look at this Duke team who, you know, right now, I believe they're squarely in the top 10 of most rankings, 6th according to D1 Baseball, it's another team vying for a chance to host, a chance to be a national seed. What I heard about the Wake Forest series, Brett, was Wake is also a team that is right there with you, bunched in trying to get a top 8 seed or host a regional. So now they have that head-to-head over you, as does Clemson. So if you want to be a national seed, to me, this is not maybe your last chance, but you're running out of opportunities for quad one victories, for major victories, a series victory that you can kind of hang your hat on for the season. This Duke team comes in, though, and they're playing about as good of baseball as anyone in the country.
Yeah, I think this is, what, your last quad one weekend, I'm pretty sure. NC State potentially could be, if NC State keeps, you know, if they trend in the right direction. They're 29 right now, but to be quad one at home, they'd have to be top 25. You know, Duke right now is 21, so they're going to be in the quad one for you because of 1 through 60 and you know, for away games. So, yeah, this weekend's big, and in, like we've said last weekend, like no matter what happens this weekend, it won't hurt you too much because your strength of schedule is probably going to go up. But you do need to start racking up some more quad one wins at some point. Out of teams in the top seven or so, I think, you know, you're the team with the least amount of quad one wins in the top seven. You've helped yourself out a lot by not losing games you shouldn't lose, basically. Like you're 14-1 in quad four, 8-1 in quad three, and 5-0 in quad two. So you're taking care of business in the games you need to, but at some point to really move yourself into a place where you feel comfortable as a host or as a potential national seed, like you need to get some quad one wins, and hopefully you have some opportunities in the ACC tournament as well. But as of right now, this could be your last potential weekend for that.
I'm looking at like that Clemson series, and you didn't get one, right? And you could instead be 6-5 right in quad one. That's where that hurts. Against Wake, if you got one more, you know, so on and so forth. I think right now, and I'll save, you know, the big picture talk nationally for our next segment when we talk about postseason picture, because we're doing that a little bit right now. But this is a big series for Florida State. Let's talk Duke specifically. One of the best offenses in the ACC. They defended an extremely high level above 980 on the year. They're pitching up until really... Okay, so they gave up 18 runs in the midweek against Campbell. Campbell's a really good powerhouse mid-major team in the Carolinas. That skyrocketed their ERA well above 4. It's a good pitching staff. And they've got a lot of good relievers. Maybe the best set of relievers in the ACC come from Duke. Ben Miller is a strong candidate for ACC Player of the Year. He leads the conference in batting average and is tied or second, I think, in hits. He's tied with Cam Smith, I think, for hits at the moment.
I was going to say second in the country for average.
Second in the country for average. So Ben Miller's a star. They've got 5 or 6 kids that can damage the baseball. There's power and balance throughout their lineup. They play really well at home. Something to know about Duke, I know you guys remember in years past, they would play at the Durham Bulls athletic facility over there in downtown Durham. Well, part of what Chris Pollard was able to work out to stay at Duke when he was being courted by a lot of these national, some of these powerhouses, like, you know, some SEC schools, Miami, I know, is interested. He demanded that they play more games on their campus facility. They want to play at Duke. They don't want to drive over to downtown Durham. So they're playing all their games again at Jack Coombs Field, which got a renovation, but it is a really small park. Doesn't fit a lot of fans. I'd be surprised if they can get over 1,500 fans within that area to watch this weekend. But it's a good baseball team. They have some kind of it factor to it, Brett. You and I have watched them a few times, and they're clutch. They're never out of a ball game. They could be down 4 or 5, and in the blink of an eye, they come back. They've got an ace in Jonathan Santucci, who, you know, a lefty fastball, gets into the mid-90s there, and a Team USA kid that also, I think, is projected as a first-round or second-round draft pick. He's high up the boards. And then just wipe out relievers in the back end of their bullpen that have gotten the job done. So it's a Duke team that I think is hungry from a year ago. Do you remember they were one game away from making Omaha? I want to say Virginia got them in the Charlottesville Super Regional. Yeah, Duke won the first game against Virginia, and then Virginia blew them out twice in a row to get to Omaha. So Duke's hungry. They've got some veterans, and I think they're playing with a lot, you know, a lot of energy right now, because they also know that this is a postseason affecting type of series for both sides.
Yeah, I think Duke's a team that does a lot of things well. Like they're well-rounded. They hit, they pitch it well. They have some bullpen arms. They have some good weekend arms. They field the baseball well. And they have some offensive stars that have come up clutch for them a lot. Yeah, they just do so many things well, and it's a hard team to beat. It's a hard team to take a 3-game series from because of how many things they do well. And like you said, they're 18-6 at home this year, but it's not like a huge environment or something that you're going to have to deal with. But it's a really good baseball team that you're going to have to deal with. And a team that's probably coached really well. Like Pollard's always done a really good job with that group. And, you know, Duke is a team that you want to stay ahead of because they have some relievers that when they're available, they can shut you down. Like Charlie Beilinson is one of, if not the best closer in the country this year with 9 saves and a 2.06 ERA and 57 strikeouts in 39 innings. So, and a first rounder on the mound on Friday. So it's going to be back-to-back weeks where you get a first round type arm. Like he's not Jonathan Santucci isn't Chase Burns, but he's got really good stuff from the left side. And FSU's had a lot of success against left-handed pitchers this year, and that will be tested, you know, once again. But Santucci is that level of guy. And you know, the numbers for the other starters in the weekend say that too, but they haven't been extended out as much. So we'll have to see what their stuff is like. But there's a lot of good stuff on the mound for Duke, and it's a veteran lineup that has a good bit of talent and a, you know, a good bit of depth with the power. They have just one less homer than you this year, but they don't have somebody that's hit like 17 or anything like that, but just a lot of guys that have hit like 5 or more and 4 guys that have hit 10 plus homers. So just a team that does a lot of things well.
Yeah, offensively, you mentioned the guys. We talked about Miller, Zach Morris, you know, not the TV sitcom character, but 11 home runs, 37 RBIs.
Been saved by the bell.
I mean, it is a really good show.
Yeah,
Can we both agree?
Yes, good show.
I mean, absolutely timeless, saved by the bell. 333, 11 bombs for Zach Morris. I wish they were here in Tallahassee because the Animals would have had a extremely fun time with Zach Morris. But Devin Obi, 9 home runs, 315 on the year. AJ Gracia, 10 home runs, 42 RBIs, 311 on the year. And then Logan Bravo's got 11 home runs, and Alex Stone has 7 home runs. They field 981 as a team, which means they're not going to give you many free outs. They can steal some bases, but that's not their calling card. Morris leads them there with, you know, 11 out of 15 stolen bases. They hit doubles as well as anyone in the conference. 311 as a team. It's a good offense, and FSU's going to have to potentially win a shootout, similar to what they had to do at Wake in Game 2 and then came up just short in Game 3. On the mound, we talked about Santucci, lefty, 4-pitch mix, fastball can get up into the mid-90s, and his slider is disgusting, and it's really good. Santucci's, I mean, people are hitting 199 against Santucci, and we've seen lefties give FSU problems this year at times, but the walks might be something FSU can capitalize on. He's got 34 walks in 48 innings, and I actually think he's walked multiple guys in every start this season, so that could be a positive for Florida State against Santucci. The other guy you were talking about, Kyle Johnson, lefty. He's a freshman, 188 ERA. That's beautiful, you know. 28 and a 2/3 inning. So he doesn't get extended much. 11 walks, 32 strikeouts. Batters hitting just 178 off Johnson. His fastball, 92-93 with a wipeout slider. So another southpaw and a kid that's a two-way player for them that they really like. But I think he went 5 1/3 against Virginia Tech in his last start. So certainly he got him into the sixth, and I think Duke would love to have that again. The third guy, I can't find much on him other than his stats. I looked around, and David Boisvert, 0.92 ERA, looks like an opener type, 12 appearances, only 4 starts, so this would be his 5th start. He's only given up 5 hits in nearly 20 innings, 2 earned runs, 8 walks, 21 strikeouts. Batters are hitting 0.81. Sounds like they're going to go 1 or 2 innings with him at most and see what they have left in the pen to try and piece that together on Game 3. So I don't know what Florida State's going to do other than Arnold and Dorsey. If you get Ben Barrett back this weekend, which is the expectation, could he factor in somewhere for you? Brett, you got to win Game 1, in my opinion. I think you got to win the Arnold start. It's likely going to be a 1 or 2 run ball game either way. And if you're FSU, you need to start the weekend off 1-0 so that the pressure comes off of you for the next 2 days, and you can really compartmentalize and say, all right, well, if we win Arnold's start, then you can go in and try and split the next 2 days and be okay. So,
yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of the same formula as last week, and you got to try to get Jamie's start to win the series. And I think that's ultimately why you didn't end up, because I think you kind of knew that if you had to go play a doubleheader that you may just run out of gas on the mound and not be able to get it in the last game. And I don't know if you were ever going to be able to get 27 outs and win that last game. But, you know, if you get Jamie's start and you feel that, you know, that Jamie's going to give you a good start, that's all he's done so far this year. And FSU is 11-2 when the other team starts left-handed pitcher. And we don't have access to the split numbers, but, you know, I think Lulu has said on the broadcast, on his broadcast, that, you know, some of the numbers for FSU guys against left-handed pitchers, especially some of the left-handed hitters, are surprisingly really good. Just there's been times this year where pitchability lefties has got this team, like Ethan Darden at Clemson, even though you still got a grand slam off him. But, you know, with Santucci, he's actually struggled with command a good bit this year, 34 walks in 48 innings, and he struggled with efficiency because of that. Average, you know, only 48 innings in 10 starts, but the 77 Ks and 199 average against, you know, he minimizes damage with that, even though he puts a lot of traffic on the bases. Kyle Johnson, a freshman that is probably going to be low 90s and reaching for a 3-4 and with a pretty good breaking ball that's white found at times. And like Aria said, haven't found much on Boyceford, the guy that's going on Sunday, but his own longest outing of the year so far is only 4 innings, and he's gone 1-2 innings each of the last few weeks, but only 5 hits in 19.2 innings and 0.81 average against with 0 extra base hits allowed this year is pretty nuts. So whatever they're doing with him and that role they're in is working for them. Link said today that Ben Barrett is going to be back this weekend in a little bit of a availability. Up to 30 pitches is what it sounded like. I think Ben threw earlier this week in a live setting to make sure that he was ready to go and see where he was at. And I don't know exactly how they're planning to use him. I think maybe you just save him for that TBA that you have on Sunday and just start him there where you know you have him in a controlled environment and you can control the pitch count, and then you just go from there after that. And, you know, you got to have someone ready when Ben gets to that pitch count. But, you know, maybe you also want to use him in a big moment because, you like we've said, you don't have much from the right-handed side of the mound in relief right now. But it's just, can you 100% know what you're going to get from Ben when he's been out for basically 8 weeks at this point? So it's just, what role are you comfortable using him in his first week back? But he does sound like he's good for 30 pitches this week. And Leiter, it said, you know, got good news. I think that was the same word as last week. Whitaker is moving along. Everybody's trending in a positive direction, but only getting Ben back this week for now. But everybody else is getting, you know, moving in the right direction, it sounds like.
What do we got for game time? 6 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock Saturday, 1 o'clock Sunday. ACC Network there on Saturday nationally, so that'll be good at 4 o'clock. Fingers crossed. I didn't look at the weather forecast, but I don't think this team really wants a doubleheader with the current state of the arms. So hopefully, you know, 3 true games and weather's decent, and then the Carolinas this weekend. And I thought last weekend in Wake was pretty nice up until, you know, the rain day, and we didn't play on that day, but pretty solid temps and playable baseball up in the Carolinas. So you hope for that one again. Big series for Florida State. This could be the marquee series victory of the year. They need one. See what happens when they toe the rubber against Duke. Brett, let's spend 5 minutes here and wrap up on the national seed picture and the postseason picture. I've pulled up some different stuff here, but seems like the top five right now with A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Clemson, every one of those are pretty safe for a national seed. They've all taken care of business. It feels like the final three spots are kind of jockeying right now between four teams. Certainly, you've got a lot of baseball left, so teams can get hot and cold, and that can change. But as of today, you know, FSU, UNC, East Carolina, and Wake have been battling for a national seed. Oregon State's in that mix, too, but they, you know, they took it on the chin recently. I think Cal got them out west, and Oregon State's just 10-7 in the Pac-12 and 12th in the RPI, so they're a tick down. But you got a couple of ACC teams there, Brett, that are battling with you, right? UNC's 15-6 in the league. Florida State's 11-7, Wake's 11-10, but the catch 22 there is Wake has beaten you twice. So they're going to certainly, I think they're above you in the pecking order at the moment. They have 10 quad one victories to your 5. Fourth ranked strength of schedule, 11th RPI, and with that head-to-head, I just think they're ahead of Florida State. Carolina's one that's interesting. I think D1 baseball's higher on their resume than I am. But 15-6 in the ACC is certainly loud. But they've lost 4 series on the year. That has to matter in my eyes. They're only 6-8, right, in the quad one. Florida State's 5-6, so bunched up. East Carolina, I'm not real sure, 8th on the RPI, 40th strength of schedule. They've only got 4 quad ones. There's just not a lot of quad ones to be had in the American Athletic Conference. But I just feel like, Brett, and you tell me if I'm wrong, if ECU wins their conference regular season and then probably wins their conference tournament, that's going to be a hard team probably to keep out of being a top 8, right?
Yeah. And
the committee wants to mix and match if they can, so it's not just ACC, SEC dominating everything. So I really feel like you're right now playing against UNC and Wake for a national seed.
Yeah, I mean, this conference in itself is just really interesting. Like, you're really still bunched up for ACC tournament and stuff too, which goes along with the RPI and the tournament and everything like that. I mean, like, there's still a lot of teams that are still alive, even if they're not in the conversation right now, that they're still alive for hosting in this conference. Because I mean, even VT is still 12-9 in the conference, and like NC State is 12-9 in the conference. Wake Forest is only 11-10 in the conference, and they're one of those teams that are in there right now, and that's probably because they've played so many quad one games this year at 10-10 against quad one teams. But yeah, there's just a lot of really good teams in this conference, and you're stacking up right with the SEC, I think, this year. The SEC right now has the top 4 teams in the RPI, but you follow it right back up with Clemson, FSU, and UNC right behind those four. So yeah, I think it's going to be a grind till the end. Like, this is going to go all the way through the end. You have 2 away series, the other away series being at Pitt, and then you have 2 home series with NC State and Georgia Tech. I think these next 2 weekends are huge, and Georgia Tech is as well, and obviously Pitt is too. Like, you can't drop any games there. Even, you definitely can't drop a series there. Maybe you drop a game there, but with where they are in RPI, you really need to go get 3 games there. Yeah, every game right now matters, basically, and every series matters. And all these teams are dangerous in their own. Like GT, I mean, they can hit the ball all over the yard and come and get you at home one weekend. So, yeah, you got to be on point and try to be a regional host and to be a national seed. You got to be consistent all year. So a lot of games left to be played and a lot of important games left to be played.
Yeah, ask Virginia if you sleep on Georgia Tech, what can happen?
Right.
The Jackets went to Davenport Field and beat UVA twice there. That's this league. I think it's as good as the conference has been in years. It's always a really good conference. This year, I think it's as close to the grind of the SEC as the ACC's ever had. I wouldn't be surprised, man, if you see 4 ACC teams in Omaha. Like, that's the type of league it's been. You could get 6 regional hosts, right, from the ACC. Up to 10 teams could make it. This conference has been incredible. I think some of that has to do with the transfer portal.
There's parity too.
Well, yeah. And these ACC and SEC schools are taking a lot away from the mid majors and finding their stars and getting them to commit to come play in the ACC and the SEC. So I think that's hurt the mid major programs. And from talking to coaches in these mid majors, it's really bothering them. But you see what it's doing to some of these Power 5 leagues, right? It's creating depth and real talent all the way through.
There's also no team that just has like pulled away from everybody else in the conference this year, I don't think.
Clemson.
But they're not. Have they really pulled away in the rankings and the record and everything? I mean, even UNC at this point has a better. Oh no, their win percentage isn't higher, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, Clemson's 13-5.
But it doesn't feel like there's that one super dominant team. Like, I don't. It doesn't feel like there's.
See what you're saying. Yeah, like last year, Wake Forest was better than everyone.
And the year, 2 years before that, like Lynx Notre Dame teams had such a better.
Fair point. Totally.
But I think there's a lot more of just like everybody beats up on each other this year. Like you just don't know what's going to happen any given weekend in the ACC this year. You just don't. Like,
It's a good call. I mean, Pitt had Clemson on the ropes,
right?
Remember?
Like Pitt almost went and got a series at Clemson. It's just you got to be on point every weekend in this conference.
No doubt.
I mean, gosh, Miami's 7-14 in the ACC now. That's brutal.
They've separated themselves the opposite way.
Yeah. Gosh, that Clemson-Georgia game, 15 innings.
I stayed up to watch every single pitch.
Did you see the home run in the ninth inning?
Yeah, that it was fair.
It was definitely fair.
It's embarrassing to me that you would review that and also still get it wrong.
I mean, there's just never because there's never going to be that perfect angle. But you,
it was
if the ball
clear
disappears,
to me
if the ball disappears, yeah, whatever.
I mean, were you really that upset?
No, not really. But I get PTSD from our 17 inning game with NC State.
Yeah.
On the back end of a doubleheader a few years ago. So
didn't
Jimmy
Clemson
Bellinger
Georgia,
had to sit through that too.
Clemson and Georgia 2 years ago had a game go longer.
Maybe they did.
It went like 6 hours and 45
I just
minutes,
felt bad for Belly
minutes.
Thinking about the fact Belly had to sit through ours. At least we won ours.
Yeah.
Then with Jaime's home run over the fence. That was the longest day ever.
Yeah. Gosh. All right. Yeah. Good podcast episode. I had a buddy text me and ask, you know, is Florida State in jeopardy of hosting a regional? And I said, right now, no. You know, you could probably lose the series to Duke and still be okay for a regional spot. I do think if you lose the series to Duke,
you got to win the last three series.
Right. National seed becomes a hot finish for you, and then maybe looking good in the ACC tournament to get back into that top eight. To get out of a regional picture, I think you'd probably have to – you can't get swept at any point this season. That's detrimental.
I think it would be either getting swept this weekend or losing this series and an additional series down the road and a bad showing in ACCT.
Yeah. Which is certainly possible, but the way this team has played this year, I would be surprised if that happened. But that's the beauty of this is we can just observe. And
if you keep playing defense at a .980 fielding percentage clip with this offense, no matter what you have with the arms, you're going to win games. So you should be okay.
Anything else?
Good.
Guys, appreciate you listening. 5 stars, please, if you can, on Apple Pods. I ask every episode, and I'm going to continue to do so because it really does matter for us. And, you know, your support helped us land a partnership with Alumni Hall. So that definitely makes a difference. A comment would be appreciated on Spotify and Apple. It helps people find us, and it does, in the algorithm, help when people are searching for podcasts to find us. If you could also mention to your friends, Sunday Golds, those who love FSU baseball, that there isn't a better podcast out there for them, we would appreciate that. Thanks to Marco Dingis for joining us here on Sunday Golds. That was an awesome exclusive interview we got. And of course, Alumni Hall, appreciate you. Thanks for your friendship. Thanks for your partnership. And we look to continue to forward, move this and progress together here as a podcast and as a store. So hopefully we talk to you again there on Monday with the Noles winning 2 out of 3. And so until we do get to talk to you again, for Brett Nevitt, I'm Aria Masudi, and this has been Sunday Golds.